Welcome to another all-new episode of the Three Bid League podcast. As always, I'm your host, Tyler, joined by my co-host, Matt. And we are going to go into episode 3 of our team previews. If you did not listen already, please go back and check out episode 1, St. Louis, UMass, St. Joe's, and Fordham. Or episode 2, Dayton, Duquesne, and Rhode Island. Today, in the third episode, we will be covering the teams in the DMV, VCU, George Mason, Richmond, and GW. Matt, shall we kick things off with the preseason, official preseason poll, number 3, VCU Rams?
Yeah, let's do that. And, you know, it's a good point. This week, all in the last 7 days or so, we got the A10 preseason poll. We got the AP poll. We got KenPom ratings. The season's getting close. And not that this stuff matters a whole lot right now, but it's just another sign that the season's almost here, and I can't wait. It gives us more to talk about.
Yeah, it's inching forward. We got game times now. And if any of our listeners want to make their case for what 7 o'clock game I should lock in on opening night, because all the best ones are at 8. So it kind of lines up perfectly to just catch the second half of George Mason or St. Louis, as long as one of those two are close. Yeah, if anyone wants to make the case for what's going to be the most entertaining 7 o'clock game that night, please. I'm looking for a recommendation here. I'm really not sure where to go.
Well, we're definitely, I don't have the schedule in front of me. We're definitely going to have some takes in our last episode. Who's going to lay an egg on opening night? Who's in the most danger of having the first epitome of brutality? Because we know after what LaSalle did last year, it's not going to be a perfect first night. I mean, especially since I think we have 2 road games against ranked teams with George Mason and LaSalle. So somebody else though is going down. We'll find out who.
Yeah. Well, George Mason won't be, not George Mason. I guess George Mason really can't lay an egg. They're at Auburn. Like, unless right. They lose by 30, it's can't really be that bad of a night, but LaSalle's not going to lay an egg at Villanova, because that is a game that they're absolutely expected to lose. But shout out to them. That game starts a half hour early, so we all get to soak in the first half of LaSalle and then go into the other games and decide whether or not we want to stick with it to the end.
I'm going to guess probably not, but we'll find out. All right, let's get into VCU.
All right, let's do it. As a reminder to everybody, we throw the timer on for 10 minutes, try to keep ourselves a little disciplined here. But here we go. The VCU Rams, they end up losing 2 of their starters in last year, Vince Williams and Keyshawn Curry, along with, I guess, whoever was basically their starting center. They rotated that spot throughout the year. But they bring back an excellent young backcourt. Ace Baldwin and Jaden Nunn both return. Plenty of other pieces on the side as well, including Jalen Deloach, Nick Kern, and the return of the sixth man of the year from 2 seasons ago, Jameer Watkins, who appears to be pretty close to getting himself healthy.
I think last year we pretty much saw more of the same from VCU, although it was a slight downtick from their 2021 NCAA season. Really, really elite defense and some pretty questionable offense, although it did get a lot better once Ace Baldwin came back. So we'll see if the Rams can build on that for this year.
Yeah, it was kind of a weird season. They really struggled to score until Ace came back, as you said. But Vince Williams was absolutely excellent. Many have made the case that he was the true player of the year in the A-10 conference. And now they have to replace that production. But they got a ton of talent on the wing this year. The Michigan transfer, Zeb Jackson, top 100 recruit in Fats Billups, year 2 for Jaden Nunn. There's a lot of options there. Maybe it's not one guy. It probably won't be. But it could be a sum of the parts scenario. And ever since Shaka Smart got to VCU, the coaches there have proven to us that their teams are often better than the whole with the sum of their parts, because they know how to put these guys together and make them play well. And if COVID had come 2 months earlier in 2020, then we would have absolutely no seasons of proof to say that that's not a guarantee every single season.
I mean, yeah, that's pretty much right. And looking at the roster from last year, who's returning? What do you think the leading scorer, like how many points per game will an individual have for VCU? Because I see Ace Baldwin averaging 11 and a half last year. I think he's going to have an outstanding year, but not really as a scorer. I just think he does pretty much everything else so well, and that's where he has his impact. But like with what you were saying, I could see a ton of guys just in the 8 to 11 points per game area, and VCU's defense is going to make it so that that doesn't matter. They're not going to need to score 75, 80 points a night to stay competitive.
Yeah, and that ties in perfectly with my first question, which is there a big time ceiling raiser on this roster from either end? Where you saw the impact that Vince Williams made on both the offensive and defensive ends, I don't think anyone besides Ace is going to be able to be that good on both sides of the ball, but they need someone to be that good on one of the two sides because the talent is strong enough that they should absolutely be right in the thick of the double bye hunt. They're an NCAA tournament contender. But if we start talking about being able to compete with Dayton or St. Louis under the assumption that at least one of those two is somewhere near their ceiling, one of these guys has to become a superstar and they have to get up to that 15, 16 points a game range or be an ultimate lockdown defender at an Ace Baldwin level.
Yeah, I mean, I think I would echo the same thing. I don't think VCU needs an elite scorer to be a really good team this year, but if they were going to have someone to replicate Vince Williams' production last year, at least offensively, I think Jaden Nunn seems to be the safe answer. This is a guy that coming off an all-rookie team season was selected preseason all-conference by the A-10. Only averaged about 8.5 points per game last year, but he showed flashes starting just about every game as a true freshman last year. Had a couple big time scoring games, especially in the NIT where he had 31 points against Princeton and Wake Forest. So I think that seems like the safe answer if he can improve his shooting a little bit. Shot the ball at 36% from deep, which was one of the best on the team last year. So he was kind of a limited usage guy last year. I'm thinking VCU's going to want the ball in his hands a lot more just because outside of Ace, seems like on paper, he's the most talented offensive player on the team.
Yeah, he's the easy first pick to fill that void. But because you covered him so well, I guess I'll talk about Jameer Watkins here, who really came on strong at the end of the season 2 years ago. He was a good heat check, low volume guy who then was asked to carry a really heavy offensive load the final few games of the year when Bones Highland was out. And he got his numbers on some just putridly bad efficiency. Now, to anyone who still has those games in their brain, that team without Bones was an abomination on offense. And so it's tough to blame Jameer Watkins for that. But for him to be this guy, he's going to have to get into the 13, 14 shots a game range while still shooting it at the same numbers that he was putting up when he was on a lower volume. And amazingly, he was actually only 29% from three that year. Part of that, he was not good in the non-con. He was a lot stronger in conference play. But in brief flashes, it was there for him. And I think that Mike Rhodes can kind of let him play out there through the bumps in the road, coming back from his recovery, because they're not going to have to ask a ton from him on defense because of Ace. Because of Jaden Nunn, who's continually getting better on that end, and because of Nick Kern, who I kind of forgot about all summer until Rhodes went out of his way to shout him out on Media Day as someone who took a big leap this summer. I'm not sure he's the answer on offense, but he reminds me of a young Keyshawn Curry, who is just the perfect guard to have on the press because he's long and quick. And he's a guy who's just going to disrupt passing lanes all year, and that should get him on the court.
I think so. And I think that's what makes it tough with VCU to keep track of all these guys. a lot of their wings do seem to have similar skill sets where maybe if Jameer Watkins isn't 100% ready to go at the beginning of the season, you can plug someone in like Nick Kern or Billups, Zeb Jackson. They've got a lot of pieces there that should be athletic defenders, can fit those roles. And I think that does take a lot of pressure off Watkins, where we've seen what he could do at the end of his freshman season. But I don't think he needs to be a critical component right from the jump, where throughout the season he can get his legs back under him. And by the end, hopefully, is where he can have a big impact.
Yeah, and honestly, I think this is going to be a clunky team in the non-con. And Dr. John came on here and he talked to us about the importance of winning in the non-conference to getting into the NCAA tournament. And we've seen the last few years, bad non-conference performances has basically been what stuck the A-10 as a two-bid league. And I think a team, I think Dayton and St. Louis especially, can basically lock things up in November, December. But these last few years, we tend to see one team that's clunky in the non-con. They come into A-10 play, they set the world on fire, they win 14, 15 games, and they make it in anyway. I think VCU has a lot of potential to do that because they're going to have at least one really bad, stupid loss in November while they try to get this roster gelled together and really get the motor going.
Yeah, and I wouldn't accuse VCU of winning pretty games either. I'm sure they're going to have a lot of nights that we question their offensive abilities in November and December, but they're probably going to find a way to get it done against like an Atlantic Sun team or a CAA team and win 65 to 61. But as long as VCU can just survive those games without losing, even if it doesn't look good, by the end of the year, I think that's really what's going to matter. And it's pretty much what happened last season, where they started out 3-4 with a disappointing performance at home and a few of their bye games before ripping off, I believe it was an 18-4 record to close their regular season. So, very much agree that this could be a team that by the time we get into the middle of conference play, they're more feared than anybody to play against.
Yeah, and my second big question going along with this idea of developing as the year goes on is when we get to conference play, is this young center rotation going to be up to the VCU standard of defense? It's going to be year two for Jalen Deloach and then a pair of true freshmen in Christian Fermin and Toby Luwal. It's a really, really young group. And we saw, just like with Jameer Watkins 2 years ago, we saw some really nice flashes from Jalen Deloach late in last season. He was also in the middle of a four center rotation throughout the year, a battle that he basically ended up winning because the other three all left. It's his job now, unless one of these freshmen can come and take it from him. But VCU relies on that rim protection to clean up messes when their guards get a little too aggressive. And it's not something that I feel confident in early in the season that any of these guys are going to be able to step in and immediately just make a big difference. I think that's why he got Levi Stockard 2 years ago, because he looked at a guy like Hassan Ward, saw him as a big difference maker, but not immediately.
I think so, and I'm not exactly sure how that young big man rotation is going to work, but you mentioned Levi Stockard, and I think that's perfect because it ri reminds me a bit of Brandon Johns coming over from Michigan. Not a guy that had a ton of impact in the Big Ten, although he was playing in the rotation at what's been a really good program the last couple of years. And Johns is kind of the same archetype, I think. He's 6'8". Not really the same type of rim protector that we've seen from the likes of Hassan Ward or Jalen Deloach, but a guy that should be able to pull down some rebounds. I wonder if we're going to see something similar where VCU is playing two bigs at the same time. And I think that could be effective if you pair Johns with one of the freshmen or Deloach.
I would outright expect Brandon Johns to start a power forward for this team. And he's smaller and a little bit quicker than Levi Stockard, but they're, and also honestly, I think he's just a little bit better as well. But they're good at the same things. He's just a really scrappy guy. If he plays enough minutes, he'll be in the conference leaders in rebounding this year because he's just going to want to pummel people on the boards. But I think as the season goes on, with how much talent they have on the wings, the eventual best case scenario for this team is Jameer Watkins at the four, with Ace probably none, and then another one of those young guards at the three, with one of those versatile centers that has a chance to be the best offense VCU has had since the year Marcus Evans went crazy. But Brandon Johns can be really, really critical for the defense, for the rebounding, and for cleaning up mistakes.
Yeah, and even if VCU wanted to play a smaller lineup, we've seen that before on some of their last great teams with Marcus Santos Silva. Maybe he can do something like that, and they don't need to play a true center.
Yeah, and if anyone cares and is actually tracking this, Jalen Deloach is my X factor for this team. I already talked about him, though. Just didn't slip that in. But
yeah,
timer went off. But before we move on real quick, Matt, VCU comes in at number three in the preseason poll. Not unexpected at all.
Mm-mm.
But in the spring, the talk amongst everyone was this is Dayton and St. Louis. Then there is a big gap. And then I guess VCU is the best of that next grouping. Now I'd say it's almost 50-50 where there's still plenty of holdouts who say, no, it's those top two, and then that big gap still exists. But just kind of the scuttlebutt and talking to other people in the media, there's just a lot more people who are now more freely saying that it's a top three. And sorry to whoever said it. I forget who it was. I believe it was one of the A-10 talk guys. Asked Rhodes about that idea of them being in the top three. And this was just not true 6 months ago. Did we start this? Because we definitely were the first ones to start championing for it. And I think we're the reason that there is now kind of a blurred line between two and three in these tiers.
I'd like to think we had something to do with it. We've been hyping up VCU for a long time. And just look at their record every year. The 1 year, or so Mike Rose has had two bad years. The first year when he had no talent to work with, and the year everybody got injured. But they're contenders every year. Why would we doubt them now? So, yeah, it's silly. It's always been a top three, or it should have been.
All right. Let's move it along to a team that it would not typically be the second ranked in the preseason amongst these squads, but they are this year, the George Mason Patriots. Bring back their star center and Josh Oduro after he tested the draft waters. Devon Cooper, who I think most of us didn't realize actually still had 1 year of eligibility left. He did. He's using it. The incredibly exciting to watch ticket gains. And a few random bench pieces led by Ronald Polite and Blake Jones, pairing up with what I have to believe is the most hyped recruiting class in terms of both transfers and freshmen in the history of George Mason.
Well, it's certainly more hyped than anything we saw in the Dave Paulson era. And I think you'd have to go back to our inaugural season of the Three Big League podcast to find this much excitement over the Patriots. I think that was the year they were picked third and it didn't work out. But this year feels like the same type of upside when you're building around a potential player of the year in Oduro. And you add a lot of these talented transfers and freshmen, they could go places this year.
Yeah, and dare I say, I think they might actually have the third best roster in the league on dead talent. Just talked about how VCU coaches always come through and make their rosters better than the sum of their players. I'm not sure VCU actually has a better roster when you just go player by player down the line than George Mason. That's how good this team is, and that's why there should be excitement here.
I think so, and I think overall something that people don't realize about George Mason too, like you mentioned Davon Cooper having that surprising year of eligibility that maybe people forgot about, but George Mason's old. They bring him back. Oduro and Gaines are fourth-year players. They get Victor Bailey Jr. and Saquon Singleton, both as graduate transfers. This is kind of like Richmond
last
year.
Same with Jinico Giacco.
Another guy, yeah. I mean, this team, like, you know, we had the Richmond jokes last year, but they might need to move the game times up so these guys can get some sleep, get to bed early.
And yet, the craziest thing out of this, is that the single most important player to, are they just slightly in the top half versus are they an NCAA tournament contender? It might be Devin Dinkins, the true freshman point guard, who is my big X factor for this team. And question number one, I think it should be everyone's question number one, is can their point guards just be competent this year? I'm not even asking for average, because actually, if you count out the point guards in this league, having the eighth best point guard situation is really good, because there's seven studs at that position in this conference. But can George Mason just be better at that spot than half of the pillow fight teams? Because the rest of the roster is there right now, at least offensively. And we saw Ronald Polite at the end of last year. He proved, at least to me, I don't get why people have been so critical of him. He was really decent at the end of the year, and he stabilized that team. But on an NCAA tournament team, he is a backup. And the people who watch Saquon Singleton at New Mexico aren't even sure he's a point guard. Devin Dinkins, a local kid that seems to be beloved in the DC area, he's their point guard of the future. I want to see if he can seize it right now, because he's a huge potential ceiling raiser.
I agree 100%. And I think looking at the 2 through 5 positions, George Mason is arguably as talented and experienced as any team in the conference, but a lot of questions at the point guard spot. And it's pretty similar to last year, where for a while they were getting good games out of Xavier Johnson, but he was turnover prone, didn't really shoot the ball well enough to fit into this team. And now it really comes down to, either is Dinkins going to be ready to go as a true freshman right away, or are they going to have to find answers elsewhere? And looking at Saquon Singleton as a potential option, I think it's interesting. I mean, you go back 2 years, he was third in the Mountain West in assist rate, but also dealt with turnover issues, not a good shooter. He was at 41% from the free throw line last year. So I don't know how well he's going to fit offensively at George Mason. But I mean, either one of those guys or Ronald Polite, someone's going to have to take the lion's share of those minutes. And that's just a question. Can they get an A-10 league average performance out of the one spot?
Yeah. And they were the fifth best offense in terms of efficiency, according to KenPom, last year. With Oduro, Cooper, and with what Victor Bailey showed in terms of scoring ability at Tennessee 2 years ago, I think just running basically some clunky isolation stuff all season, they can still get to that fifth spot pretty easily. But if this is a good, disciplined offense, they might be number one. I'll give them two, because St. Louis is just going to be a juggernaut on that end of the court. But George Mason has a serious, serious chance to be the second best offense in this conference. And once you have that, they have to be in the double bye discussion, if not one of the favorites. But for me, my number two question for them is, what will improve this defense this year? Because that has to go up. Fourth to last in the conference last year. And more specifically, Kim English, throughout the summer, not just on our pod, but on basically every media hit he has done, has talked about how his depth is going to make his defense better. It's going to keep his guys fresher. And that certainly helps a little bit, but is that enough?
Yeah, we'll see. And that really is where George Mason needs to improve the most. They made huge strides offensively last year, but they were 11th in the conference in defensive efficiency. And I do think a lot of that can improve with some of the additions to this team. I mean, we've already talked about Saquon Singleton, but he spent 2 years at New Mexico, and in each year, he was top 25 in the Mountain West in both steal rate and block rate. So I think potentially his length at the guard position makes him interesting. And the other guy, too, I want to talk about Jenica Ogiako, because Coach English has indicated that he's going to play a lot, even though Mason arguably has the best center in the conference, or at least one of them. Do you think that you can pair Ogiako and Oduro together? Might hurt the offensive spacing a little bit, but That could potentially be a monster front line and also take pressure off Odura to stay out of foul trouble.
I don't know, but he is the biggest difference to this defense.
Well, he seems like a guy too. I know that Oduro's not going to come out of the game much, but Ojiako just seems like a guy that is potentially too good to leave on the bench for, 30, 35 minutes a game.
The interesting thing is, I feel like part of the reason why their defense struggled so bad last year is that Aduro would sometimes get passive on that end, knowing that he's just a very foul-prone player and that they were screwed if he was in foul trouble. Because not only was he their best offensive option, but he basically had no backup. Like they were going to Malik Henry in sparing minutes there, but he had to be the rim protector. And really was the only guy to be able to take on that responsibility, despite the fact that he wasn't that great at that job. Now with Ojiako, he doesn't have to worry about that anymore. In the 20 minutes a game or so that Ojiako gets, their defense is simply just going to be better than it was last season because he's going to stabilize the rim protection. He's going to give Oduro the ability to focus his energy elsewhere, which, God, let's think about Josh Oduro possibly investing more energy into his offensive output, but he changes their back line immediately. He's going to be a better defender than Oduro and Malik Henry. The question, I think the bigger question is, can one of those returning guys between Oduro, Cooper, Polite, because I think he's going to play big minutes, maybe not Ticket Gaines because he's already a good defender, can one of them just take somewhat of a leap on defense because they're all going to play a lot of minutes and they just need their individual defenders to all be a little bit better to get into the top half.
Yeah, and I do think that is where the depth is going to come in particular on the wings, because I think we all expect Davon Cooper, Victor Bailey, and Devontae Gaines. They're all seniors. They're all going to play a lot of minutes. But I don't even know if we've talked about them this summer. I don't know if we have in this episode. But George Mason might have the best freshman in the conference, and Justin Fernandez. And even though it doesn't look like there's a super clear path to playing time, this is another guy. I just think he's going to be too good to sit the bench for extended minutes. And I just think having a really solid backup, or maybe he even starts, but just having another good option at that position might free up these guys to expend more energy on defense. And just having that extra depth is going to be an advantage that George Mason didn't have last year.
Well, and I think Justin Fernandez's path to playing is on the defensive end because Bailey and Cooper together is a pretty small wing combo. And I think late in games, if they have the lead, Coach English is going to potentially look Justin Fernandez's way if he can prove himself on that end. He's supposed to be just an absolutely dynamite athlete. So I think he's going to have to prove himself on defense, and the offense will just kind of come with the minutes he gets.
I think so. And overall, if George Mason can make those big improvements on defense, I think they're just going to kind of back their way into a clear winning record in the conference. There shouldn't be too much to worry about offensively. Losing Deshaun Schwartz is a big blow, but seems like they did more than enough to replace his production, so I'm not that worried on that end.
Yeah, and look, I'm talking about can they get to somewhere around league average in defense with the best or second best offense? Well, two teams were pretty close to that last year. St. Louis, second in offense, sixth in defense. They end up finishing fourth. Davidson, number one offense, number eight defense, slightly below average. They win the conference. Like, if you can be an elite offense and an average defense, that's top four.
I think so. Well, you want to talk about another team that's ridden some average defenses to top four finishes recently?
They didn't ride it to one last year, but they did ride it for four magical days to the NCAA tournament. That, of course, is the Richmond Spiders. All of those old guys that we joked about never leaving. Well, guess what? They're actually gone. Jacob Gilliard off to the G League. Nathan Kao moving on. Grant Golden is either in the G League or pretending to be a man named Bryce and playing for Loyola Chicago. We'll figure that out soon enough. But they do bring back their leading scorer from last year, Tyler Burton, another starter in Andre Gustafsson, everybody's favorite Matt Grace, and add a whole lot of young guys who were on the roster but really didn't see many minutes.
Yeah, I don't think we can say Richmond got rid of all the old guys because Andre Gustafsson and Matt Grace are two of the few fifth-year seniors still in the conference. Back from the inaugural season of the Three Vid League podcast, they've been here since the beginning, and we get to talk about them one more time on a team preview. But overall, this Richmond team is going to look quite a bit different than we've seen the last 4 years, and seems like on paper they've made some additions that are going to fit in quite nicely, but we'll just have to wait and see. There's going to be a lot of changes for the Spiders.
Yeah, in the big one, a guy who has been starting to get a lot of hype is Neil Quinn, who transfers over from Lafayette, second team All Patriot League, 14 and a half, 7.5, 4 rebounds, 55% field goal percentage. Those are like Grant Golden numbers to the absolute max. We've heard murmurs throughout the summer that he might be the best passing big man in the entire country. He's just a perfect Chris Mooney player. And that leads me to my first question. How good is the Chris Mooney system? And how far can that take this team? Because he did a good job of going out this summer and picking up some pieces that fit really well. Not just Quinn, but also Jason Roach, sophomore who comes over from the Citadel. He was the rookie of the year in the SoCon, scored 13 points a game, was a dynamite three-point shooter. And these are two guys that you listen to the description of their skills, and they sound exactly like Chris Mooney, Princeton offense players. And I think the VCU fans who are still listening at this point, they're going to chuckle. They're going to say, well, look at what Chris Mooney did these last 2 years. How can you say that he's going to elevate these teams? Yeah, he hasn't been at his best in terms of bringing teams into the NCAA tournament, but what he's been really good at, with the exception of that 2019 season where the only good players on his team were true freshmen, is he keeps Richmond consistently good, consistently competitive. And what was headed for a rebuild year now looks more like a reload with the addition of those two transfers. And the one thing we do know is the pieces are going to fit. These are guys who are going to work well for what Chris Mooney wants to do. And this is going to be a really good proving ground for him to show how well he can bring these guys together.
I think so. And even though a lot of the personnel has changed, I don't think we're going to see Chris Mooney abandon a system that, for the most part, has worked for the better part of 15 years. And I do think Neil Quinn, if you had to draw up a perfect transfer, I think we had Dr. John say, call him the best passing big man in the country last year. And if he can figure out exactly what Coach Mooney wants him to do and get these other Richmond players integrated into the offense, they might just not miss a beat. He could be that talented. So I absolutely think there's a chance. I also just think that it could be a situation where it is a tough system to learn and might take some time throughout the season for all the players to really figure it out and get comfortable with the offense.
Yeah, and that's where we might see an immediate payoff on Mooney's investment last year, bringing in all of these young guys like Jason Nelson, like Marcus Randolph, and convincing them to basically just ride the bench for an entire year. These were guys who knew they weren't going to play, but they had a chance to practice with the older guys and really start to learn the system.
So is this the time where we get to talk about my favorite freshman in the conference,
Yeah,
Jason
just
Nelson?
go.
Well,
Just take it.
I think we have to, and this is important. Jacob Gilliard led the country in minutes per game last year. Richmond did not have a backup point guard, and I'm not sure they have a backup point guard this year either, because really, Jason Nelson, looking at the roster, he's the guy. and I expect he's going to be playing big minutes right away. I guess that's one of the big questions for the Spiders is can they get by with a redshirt freshman at point guard, such a critical component of the Princeton system? And you just have to wonder how much did he learn practicing behind and against Gilliard last year?
Matt, simply by the fact that you put a question mark at the end of that means you're sleeping on them. And
Well,
that's what we're hearing. That's what we're hearing from everyone who was in the gym with Jason Nelson last year, that everyone is sleeping on him. We'll see if the Richmond hype machine and what Jacob Gilliard and all those other older guys have to say pays off this year. But yeah, he's my X factor. He's the most critical piece of this Richmond equation. I guess Jai Bailey actually could probably play some minutes at point guard. But other than that, yeah, there basically are no other options. And you especially look at the fact that Nelson's going to be flanked most likely by Andre Gustafsson next to him, who is an excellent player at exactly what his current role is. If he is the fifth best guy on your team, you feel pretty good about having him because he's just going to hustle hard, he's going to make little plays. Twice during big games throughout the season, he'll hit a huge shot, but he's not a guy who's going to elevate your team. He's just someone who's going to kind of keep you out of the basement. And if that's your two guard, then you need your point guard to be excellent.
Yeah, absolutely. And we'll find out early if Nelson's ready for the task. I think playing alongside a bigger guard in Gustafsson, who's 6'5", that's going to help. But the other key position that Richmond's going to need to replace, and I think this is where it impacts the defensive end more, but they lose Nathan Kao, who is pretty much a mainstay at the four spot for the last 3 years. Looks like it's going to be Matt Grace at this point playing alongside Neil Quinn, so they'll kind of go with a two big man lineup. But I'm curious, how do you see Richmond replacing Nathan Kao's rebounding? Because this is an area where Richmond has struggled from time to time, especially on the offensive rebounding end. And I just wonder, can Matt Grace or somebody else replicate that physicality down in the post?
I'm not too worried about the rebounding. I think that's where Matt Grace is going to make a serious impact this season. I think they can rely on him to really hit the boards hard. But I am really concerned on the defensive end. Now, maybe Neil Quinn is just a better defender than Grant Golden, but KO for the last 3 years has constantly just been taking the tougher defensive assignment, even when it doesn't make sense size-wise. And he rightfully got his flowers in the Iowa game. Because he was great against Keegan Murray, who right now is probably the most hyped up pick for NBA Rookie of the Year at the moment. And Murray got his points, but he had to work hard and take a lot of shots to get there. And that's what Nathan Kao brought to this team. I'm not sure. We know Matt Grace is not a high-end defender. I think he's better than Golden. I don't think he's as good as Kao. But if Neil Quinn's below average, they're going to hemorrhage a lot of points down low.
Yeah, they very well could. Although I do feel like at the four spot, it's potentially, I don't want to say it's where Richmond will get better on offense, but at least they're going to be able to space the floor now because KO is a guy that did not shoot the ball from beyond 10 feet at all. Now you have Grace there. You also have Isaiah Bigelow coming over from Wofford as a transfer. This is a guy who put up a ton of 3-point shots for the Terriers over the last couple seasons. So we should see a different look there. And that's something, too, where Richmond quietly was a pretty bad 3-point shooting team last year, going against their brand from what we're used to seeing. I wonder if having Grace and Bigelow in the lineup a little bit more could help in that regard.
Yep, and that is my second question for the Spiders. Can they take advantage of the open shots that these guys are going to get throughout the year? Because they were not good from deep last year, 223rd in the country in 3-point percentage. And I'm sure part of it was loyalty, but the big reason why they had to keep trotting Nick Sherrod out there despite a lot of rough performances is because he was the only guy that could occasionally get hot. Besides obviously Tyler Burton, but they really needed that floor spacing from him. It could be an issue again this year. I think Roach is just going to proved to be a better Deadeye than anyone they've had the last few years from a role player perspective. But if Neil Quinn is as great of a passer as we have been told, they're going to get a lot of open shots on the wing again. I'm not sure Gustafsson's the guy to knock them down. Matt Grace will help a little bit in that regard, but if Nelson and Quinn are pinging the ball around, whoever's at that small forward position, whoever's coming off the bench for Gustafsson, they're going to have to knock in a lot of shots.
Yeah, I think so. And I mean, overall, this is just something Richmond struggled with a lot for most of last season until Jacob Gilliard just went nuclear down the stretch. So somebody's going to need to make some shots besides Tyler Burton. I mean, that's the key. We know Burton's going to get his every night, and he's another guy that could lead the conference in scoring, but who else can help him out?
Yeah, and I want to close it out here because we barely talked about Tyler Burton. And I think it's easy to pass it off the way because we didn't talk much about Josh Oduro with George Mason. It's because we know Josh Oduro is going to be excellent. He's going to score somewhere between from 17 to 20 points a game and rack up a ton of rebounds. There's not too many question marks on the offensive end for him. But I do want to cover Tyler Burton real quick because if he comes into the season just absolute guns blazing, it has a chance to be a really, really special year. I think his individual ceiling is as good as anyone in this conference is, other than Daron Holmes, and that's only because of the two-way stuff for Daron. Tyler Burton could easily be the best offensive player in this conference. He has every piece that he needs to be an NBA player, too. He just needs some consistency and he needs to just prove over a full season that he can deliver on a high volume of shots as the best player for a team. But the idea of him being a 10 player of the year is not outrageous at all. And just kind of haven't heard his name thrown around in that discussion at all. He's a guy who could easily coast to 20 points a game, be a second round pick next year, and all of a sudden we blink. And he's on an NBA roster. It's not that crazy, but to do so, he's going to have to be better in conference play. He has been awesome, an utter inferno in non-con the last 2 years. And then come January, February, tighter game planning, he drops off a little bit.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I'm glad that you gave one of the superstars of the conference his due because we spent like 20 seconds on Ace Baldwin and Josh Oduro. So
We don't need to spend any time on Ace
no,
Baldwin. We know he's going to be awesome.
that's not our thing for the preview pods. They're deep dives. We tell
I'm
you
not,
about who
I have
you've
no
never heard
questions
of.
about Ace Baldwin. I already understand that he's the best defensive guard in this conference. He's going to be top three in assists. And the only question is if he scores 11 points again or gets up to 15.
Yeah,
And there's the Ace
pretty.
Baldwin. There's our Ace Baldwin
All
pod.
right, there we go. All right, one team to take us home.
All right, the George Washington Colonials. Surprise inclusion in the top 10 of the A10 last season. They got hot late in the season behind James Bishop, Joe Bamisil, and Brayan Freeman, the three-headed monster of isolation buckets. But the only guy of that crew that is back is Bishop. However, they do return a kind of surprising number of guys throughout the roster, Brendan Adams, who bounced in out of the starting lineup, both of their centers, Ricky Lindo and Hunter Dean. And Coach Caputo noted on Media Day, he's very excited to tell people that Amir Harris is healthy for the first time in 2 years. And so maybe he has a chance to be a factor in his final year.
I hope so. And I think having such an old team is going to help out Chris Caputo in his first year as a head coach. Like you said, they've got five seniors potentially that could start. They bring in EJ Clark, a redshirt senior from Alabama State. And they've got Kwanzy Samuels too, who transferred in last year, probably coming off the bench, but another senior. This is a really old team. I wonder how much that limits their upside, but there's also the potential that they stay right in the middle of the pack just with all that experience. It at least certainly helps the coaching transition, I would think.
Yeah, it does. They're an older team than you would think. It is definitely a kind of an odd transition year because a good chunk of these guys are not going to be back next season. Kind of just bridging the gap so that Caputo can put together a recruiting class for next year. And that's why we didn't hear much hype about this team on the recruiting trail. I think we all just lost track of how many guys are back on this team. I even keep going further down the roster, a guy like Noel Brown, who had a few moments 2 years ago, basically disappeared last season. And until I pulled the roster back up to really deep dive the Colonials, I thought he was gone. I just assumed he had graduated by now, but nope. And the biggest question for this team, plain and simple, all the rumors, the hot rumor of this fall has been that James Bishop's becoming more efficient. He's working on his passing. He wants to be a better teammate this year. Is that real? Because every scenario where I see George Washington outside of the bottom three or four of this team starts with James Bishop being an inclusive team player because he is their best guy and he's going to have to set the tone for them all season long.
Absolutely. And we pretty much can guarantee, like, if you had to pick one player in the conference to bet your house on scoring 15 points a game this year, it's got to be James Bishop. You
It's
know, he's.
Oduro and then it's Bishop.
Oh, maybe. Although Mason, could, well, we're not going to go back to Mason anyway. We know Bishop is going to get his every night. The question is, how much better is that going to make George Washington? Is he going to do that? Shooting 40% from three and getting a few assists per game? Or is he just going to take as many shots as he deems necessary? And I feel like we've seen him before, especially 2 years ago when he had one of the highest assist rates in the conference. He is a guy that can share the ball. And I think with the absence of Breon Freeman and Joe Bamisile, we're going to see Bishop more in a point guard role, I would expect. So that's the key. Can he get the other guys involved in the offense where you can't just focus your defense against one player? Because that's definitely what we've seen against GW at times, or maybe focusing on two players when they had Bamisile out there too last year. But yeah, I mean, how much better can he actually make this team?
Yeah, and we saw what happens when James Bishop is just basically kind of a ball hog. It was a 5-12 record in 2021. Last year, it's gotten whitewashed a little bit because they avoided the pillow fight, but like their offense didn't get any better stylistically. It was still just kind of the clunky your turn, my turn, ISO stuff that they were running the year before. They just got lucky that they got a coach's dream for someone who's running a bad offense in Joe Bamisile. Someone who can get garbage buckets like the best of them, but had three qualities that you rarely see from that type of player. He was good in crunch time, he was a good rebounder for his position, and he was a B plus defender. That guy's gone. Breon Freeman, who was a good point guard, who also just happened to be a good garbage scorer, is gone. They're not going to be able to replace what those two were able to do in terms of isolation. So their only answer is to just have a better system this year.
Well, I think part of the solution just needs to be how much help will James Bishop have in the backcourt? Because I just went back to the 2021 GW roster. And
It
after
was
Jameer
bad.
Nelson, oh, yeah, after Jameer Nelson transferred halfway through, or he only played 7 games, Bishop was sharing the backcourt with Tyler Brelsford, Lincoln Ball, and Brandon Leftwich. That was 2 years ago. I don't think I remember any of those guys.
Hey, Tyler Brelsford was decent for like the 6 games that he was actually allowed to touch the ball.
But I mean, still, it's he's not Joe Bamisile, though. And I think my question is, can we get really good contributions from another guard on this team? And there's not that many to choose from, which is another concern, just a lack of depth. But Brendan Adams is back as a grad transfer. We've seen him shoot the three well at certain points in his career at UConn, although kind of took a step back last year at 27%. EJ Clark's a grad transfer from Alabama State, so a guy that can shoot very well, although he did it at a much lower level of competition. And then I think the other player to keep an eye on is maybe Maximus Edwards coming over from Kansas State. Missed all of last season with a leg injury, but he's apparently back and healthy this year. And potentially, as someone coming from the Big 12, could see a big impact in the A-10.
So, first of all, Tyler Brailsford, 2 assists a game on really low minutes at Bryant last year.
All
So
right, he is better than
I
I did
feel good that
not.
I did not sell my little penny stocks that I got from that 2 p.m. weekday game against Fordham when he first started at point guard and was actually moving the ball.
All right, I'm sorry to Tyler Brailsford. That was mean. I didn't mean to. Just never mind.
But yeah, my second question is basically similar to yours, which is there anyone on the wing capable of doing anything special in the way that Bamisil was able to last year? And to me, the two guys I'm looking at, you just hit him at the end there, Maximus Edwards, who is probably the most talented of all these guys coming into the roster. But I got an eye on Brendan Adams too. Transferred in from UConn. He started at the beginning of last season before Bamisil took his spot. And part of it is early on in the season, he kind of just disappeared. He'd be on the court, and you really just didn't notice him out there. And I think he's a guy who looked really, really uncomfortable in that universe of ISO ball. Maybe someone who could be a more reliable shooter in a more Jim Larranaga-esque offense. And I mean, really, all of these things just kind of come down to Chris Caputo. He's got to get these guys into the right positions this year. He's got to do what Jamie and Christian couldn't do and discipline this team. But there's actually more talent here than I think we realized over the summer.
I think there could be, and speaking of talent, we haven't really talked about one of your favorites. What do you think we get out of Ricky Lindo Jr. this year? Because this is someone that averaged a double-double in the shortened COVID season. Kind of took a step back last year, although he did shoot the three better at 38%, but his overall production went down a little bit. With having fewer guards on the roster and probably playing bigger lineups most of the year, do you think they're going to lean on Lindo a little bit more?
Ricky Lindo, of course, is my X factor for this team. He was bad last year. And like, I think you were kind of sugarcoating how good his performance was. He still got 8 boards a game, which seems insane, but the best version of Ricky Lindo is actually even better than that guy on the glass. And this is just kind of a little hodgepodge in the front court. He's got to be the best guy there. He was a double-double machine 2 years ago. I put him on all-conference team last preseason. Like, to anyone who actually watched him play last year, didn't see him the year before, that sounds incredibly stupid. But the talent is all there. He's a rebounding machine. He was still sprinkling in double-doubles. And the biggest reason for optimism was that last game of the year. 10 points, 11 rebounds. In the conference tournament shootout with UMass, he was the strongest guy in the paint in that game on either side. And now, granted, UMass didn't exactly have the toughest front line, but Ricky Lindo is a guy that even against Dayton, St. Louis, VCU, George Mason should be in there battling with the best big men in the league. He might not always beat them, but he should be able to go up against Daron Holmes or Tomani Kamara and make that guy work, both on the boards and for their shots. And that's his best version. I keep harping on this. He's just another guy that if they have a good offensive system this year, he's just going to be better. He wasn't getting the ball in good spots last year. And at one point, he got benched for Hunter Dean because he just wasn't asserting himself on offense.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, he's a guy where we know the talent is there, although his best success came in an abbreviated season. But I mean, it makes sense you picked him all conference last year in the preseason. We've seen some huge games from him, and I think that is somewhere where GW can really improve on this year. It's just getting him more involved back to where he used to be.
Yeah, and if he is close to what he was, then his rebounding should be the single best small element of this team this year. It's something they should be able to lean on all season long, because I don't know how good of a rebounding team they're going to be outside of the center position. But having him should at least keep them somewhere around average in terms of rebounding margin.
It very well could. And unless you have anything else, I think that concludes the last preseason preview in the history of the George Washington Colonials, because they will be something else next year.
Yeah, that kind of went away, and it sounds like it was just the noise went away. From what I've heard, this might be real, that the name may be changing. So we will see.
Wait,
next
I thought
season.
It was official. Was it not?
I had thought that people just kept arguing for it, but no one with true power ever came out and said that it was definitely happening.
I have no idea. Someone let us know. But either way, that was a good GW preview. I'm happy with that.
It was indeed. If I do say so myself, I think this was a pretty good preview episode all over. Oh, and quick error segment. Yes, they did say in June that they are officially dropping it. So,
okay.
You were right there.
The
please
George
go back.
Washington Commanders football team.
You know what? We're just going to keep riffing here and leave it in, because I actually said to someone last week, I'm bummed that the football team took that name, because I actually love it for George Washington. The George Washington Commanders is kind of an awesome name, and it's way better than the Washington Commanders.
It would have been.
Like, that actually would have been my number one pick for them had that not been taken. So that's a bummer. But yeah, go back, listen to our first two team previews. We will be back again next week. If you haven't already, you can do the math on who is still to come. Loyola, Davidson, St. Bonaventure, LaSalle. Go back, listen to our interview with Keith Dambrot. He was fantastic, about as candid as a coach is ever going to be. Opens up about this upcoming season and some of the problems they had last year. That is absolutely worth your 20 minutes. If you've enjoyed the pod, please leave us 5 stars on iTunes. Please continue to listen throughout the preseason. At the time of this recording, we are only 3 weeks off from opening day. We're getting excited. I hope everyone else is as well.